Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello, welcome once again to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem.
I hope your day is going well. Looking forward to a good conversation coming up this hour. And we're going to open up the phone lines right away as well, because I think it's an area, a topic that you will want to interact with our guest today. And we'll tell you about that in just a moment. Should mention that we are just now less than a week away from our fall fundraiser. Those are important days each September when we talk about the financial needs of this listener-supported ministry. And so September 9, 10, and 11, we'll be inviting you to join our support team. And Ted, interestingly, I mean, many have already done so. We're, about 10, 15... 15% toward the way, I think, maybe. It's already that way.
So, great way to start. And I still see it on our website. You can pre-pledge and win an iPad. It's not a requirement to pre-pledge, but that iPad drawing, I think, is today the last day for that?
No, they're going to run right through through the first day of share.
Excellent.
Yeah, so there's opportunity. But, yes, that's iPad donated to us, and we've loaded it up with some ministry resources. And so it's going to be a great opportunity for someone. And hopefully you'll make your commitment, your gift, your pledge now. But if you haven't already done so, or if you aren't able to pledge, just want to enter in, you can do that, sign up for the drawing as well. It's myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. And if you have a device, a little electronic device, you probably, put some games on it, right?
So
or your phone, or see, now you're probably going to be playing Tetris during the show today, right?
So, be ironic, wouldn't
sure,
it? talking video games, video game addiction.
Yeah,
there was a time where, I can see it's really easy to get sucked into the world that these games create, and you have to just, I can just go to the next level. Yeah. I'll just stay a little bit longer. Next thing you know, 2 hours gone by like that.
Yeah. It's not just something you did as kids, right? I mean, does your wife let you play games anymore?
We had a discussion when we first got married, like, how much time are you spending on that? And I would be over there going, just a minute.
I'll talk to you in a minute. So
I didn't play that game very much, but yeah.
Well, today's discussion, I think, will be an important one because it isn't a laughing matter. In fact, our guest today, Dr. Andrew Doan, experienced it firsthand. He's a recovering video game addict. And he's a recognized expert in technology and video game addiction. He's got a doctoral degree in neuroscience and has a great understanding of this area. In fact, he's written a book called Hooked on Games, and we're going to spend some time with Dr. Doan today. He practices comprehensive ophthalmology and eye pathology, and so he has an extensive background in medicine and neuroscience, but part of his, I guess maybe a secret life, was that for a number of years he was hooked on games. And we had Dr. Doan, Andrew, and his wife, Julie, were on with us about a month ago and just thought we want to bring them back. They were on campus in the University of Northwestern talking with some of the RAs and the staff and some of the students about, this concern. And we just wanted to bring them back and want to give you an opportunity to call and ask some questions. So we'll open up the phone lines right away at 877-93-FAITH. Carissa will take your call and hope that you can join with us here in the conversation, 877-933-2484. Dr. Doan, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Just to review a little bit about your story, I mean, you were stuck. You were deep in addiction, weren't you, for a while?
Absolutely. For over 9 years, I probably played anywhere from 50 to 100 hours a week. And so one of these things about this addiction is that I gave up sleep. So I slept 2 to 3 hours a night. I'd play all night. I'd go to school at med school. But it didn't start out that way. It was a slow, gradual entry into gaming, and then it quickly developed into this thing where I had to play 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 hours at a time, and then eventually all night.
And I guess that is, I mean, like any addiction, you can't ever get enough, right? Neurologically, there is a point where you have to get more to kind of feed the addiction, right? It doesn't have the same effect.
That's correct. And with my research now, what we were finding is that behavioral addictions drive a neuroendocrine and physiological arousal. So your brain is actually feeling good because of the neurotransmitters being released, and then your body feels good because of the adrenaline and the natural endorphins that are being released by the activity. But the problem is your body developed tolerance, so you need more and more to feel the same high. And that's why when you talk to some of these kids who play tons of games, the games are not even really that exciting anymore, but they find that they have to play more and more of it even to get the same kind of arousal, which makes sense. I mean, if you go to, let's say, you know, the amusement park, and the first time you get there, there's this huge rush and this huge, you know, pleasure. But the second time, you get less. And the third time, it's much less. And then now you go back and you're like, wow, you know, it doesn't feel the same as when the first time was. And the problem with the addictive behavior is that when there's no rest period between the events, and so people are just using and stimulating their mind and their physiology, their body, to the point where they don't get that much arousal, so they have to do more and more of it, and that's called tolerance.
And does it, I mean, is lack of sleep one of the, maybe one of the first signs or one of the first things that gets in the way? I mean, just because obviously this takes time to do.
It is. And actually, we're working on a case report now where three people got in trouble at work because of their lack of concentration. They seem to be depressed. Their mood is blunted. And then when they came into the mental health provider and were asked questions, it turns out that they were gaming on top of their full-time job 30 to 60 hours a week. And so in a way, we're not asking the question. We totally missed the point that they were sleep deprived. So they were prescribed medications for sleep, for insomnia, for inability to sleep, but the sleep medications weren't working. That's because they were playing through this psychostimulant activity, gaming, all night long. And so sleep deprivation is huge. This is unlike alcoholism. So when you drink alcohol and you drink enough, you actually pass out. And there's a natural mechanism of being so drunk that you actually get sleep and rest for your brain. Now you wake up with a hangover in the morning because of the toxins in your body and dehydration and the effects of alcohol. However, you do get sleep. With gaming addiction or with a behavioral addiction, the lack of sleep is horrendous. And when people don't have enough sleep, it's like their brain's been drunk on two drinks, actually, or actually intoxicated with two drinks. And that's why there's laws now for medical doctors to only work 80 hours a week when they're in training. Sleep deprivation is huge. So in Navy pilots, we make sure that we screen them for sleep deprivation because more accidents and more mistakes are made when people are sleep deprived. And so a lot of our kids who are hooked on digital media, the number one problem is sleep deprivation. They're falling asleep in class. They're grouchy. They have hair trigger rage. And then they start hallucinating. They don't get enough sleep.
Wow. Dr. Andrew Doan is my guest today. We're talking video game addiction. Dr. Doan has written a book called Hooked on Games. And we're here to take your calls and questions today. Maybe you have a spouse or child that you're concerned about, or you have maybe just love gaming and are concerned that you know, maybe there is a limit that you should self-impose or that you've been unable to do. I'd love to have you join the conversation. Our number is 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. And welcome you to just queue up and let's talk about it together and get some of your perspective on that. You mentioned Dr. Dona, alcoholics sort of wakes up with toxins in their body. Does a gamer addict sort of wake up with toxins? I mean, are there, you know, something that's sort of staying in the body and not getting rid of it?
No, not necessarily a toxin that we ingest. And so that's the problem with the medical diagnosis of behavioral addictions is that the world of addictions are so used to ingesting something like a toxin or a psychostimulant drug like cocaine or methamphetamine. So there's now a byproduct. But there is something that is toxic, and that's the behavioral addiction drives the neuroendocrine axis through the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis. So what happens is you drive the adrenaline, you drive the cortisol, you drive the physiological arousal, and perhaps even endorphins. And that's not proven yet. But any gamer can feel like, kind of like a pain sedative effect. And so the brain also secreting dopamine. What happens is after a long binge of gaming or even of any behavioral addiction, the body naturally shuts down those processes to make the adrenaline rush and the endorphins and also the dopamine in the brain. So as they withdraw from the behavioral activity, there is actually a down regulation of all those natural hormones and neurotransmitters. So they feel completely depressed, not, you know, excited, blunted affect. And similar to the case report that I'm working on now with the three individuals that were in trouble at work, they came in with depression, with blunted affect. But the thing that activated them, which is what's fascinating, that when we talked about the gaming, they all perked up and they got all excited and it was amazing. So they lost their mask of depression and anxiety and low mood and blunt affect. And so in essence, it's like, you know, we're stimulating their brain again to secrete those neurotransmitters just by talking about their games.
Just by talking about it.
That's correct. And that's the craving aspect. So you'll find that in other addictions too. It's called activation. And so an alcoholic who walks into a bar, starts, you know, being in the environment that the alcoholic is used to, they get excited about it. You know, drug addicts get excited when they walk into a scenario where they see the room and the syringe that they used to inject. So similar to that, you know, because of this behavioral addiction, if people are thinking about, you know, their gaming and their addictive behaviors, it actually excites them.
We're talking today with Dr. Andrew Doan, who has written a book called Hooked on Games. And Dr. Doan is a physician with a research background in neuroscience. He battled his own addictions with video games for over the 9-year period, invested thousands upon thousands of hours playing video games, losing sleep and at a crisis point, lost marriage and family, and that was part of what brought him back to sanity, I guess. We want to talk more with Dr. Doan in just a moment as we talk more about this growing addictive issue. We want to find out kind of who is addicted. I mean, how big an industry is this, and how many maybe out of those who play have the possibility of getting addicted. Are there some warning signs? You know, what is it about gaming that's so attractive? All those things we want to get to. And we invite you to join the conversation. Maybe you have someone in your family that seems like they're playing way too much games. You want to know maybe about your kids. At what age is it okay to start them? Are there some good ones, some bad ones? We'll get Dr. Doan's perspective on that. And have you join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you prefer and want to just connect with us online, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there. So if you want to just send us an email, you can do that if that's more convenient. And we'll get to your questions and comments in a moment. myfaithradio.com or 877-93-FAITH. You're listening to Connecting Faith, 18 past the hour. Today, talking to Dr. Andrew Doan. He was a recognized expert in technology and video game addiction. He has a doctoral degree in neuroscience, background in molecular neuroscience, and is a ophthalmologist and does eye surgery, all sorts of advanced things. I would say that. And had a chance to meet Dr. Doan and his wife, Julie, a month or so ago when they were on the campus at the University of Northwestern talking with some of the RAs and the support staff just about this, because it's a big issue among college and university students. But I'm sure, Dr. Doan, it's an issue among much younger than that. Give us a little sense of kind of who plays games, how early do they start, and just a little bit of a background about the industry.
Sure. You know, games is pretty here to stay in our society. So let me, you know, just lay it out there and saying that, you know, games are actually healthy, you know, kind of like a healthy pastime entertainment. However, you know, the content matters too as well. So there's a recent research study published in the UK by Dr. Chobolsky, and he showed that basically kids who play games 1 hour or less actually fared better in terms of emotional development, behavioral development, brain development, than kids who don't play games at all. But the beneficial effects of gaming diminish significantly when the gamer plays 3 or more hours a day. And so let me lay that out there, saying games are healthy, similar to, you know, a lot of things that we do in life, but we do too much and there's no moderation, there's harm. But keep this in mind also, the Kaiser Foundation has calculated through their research, or estimated through their research, that the American child uses a digital screen for entertainment 7 hours, 38 minutes a day on average. So we are way above, you know, what the research shows as being healthy. So gaming is prevalent. 85% to 90% of American homes have game consoles. Okay, so it's pervasive. So the research out of Iowa State by Douglas Gentile shows that kids 8 to 18, approximately 1 in 11 kids play games to the point where they have dysfunction in multiple areas of their lives. And that's really how we measure addiction. It's not really, you know, the degree of how much they play. For example, there are professional gamers who play in professional gaming leagues. They play 8 hours a day, but that's part of their job. But they don't have dysfunction in their lives, such as they don't skip homework to play, they don't skip work to play, they don't skip, you know, or they don't forgo relationships to play, they don't forgo sleep to play, you know, all these things that are measures of dysfunction. But there are 1 in 11 kids who have problems. And so now every year, I estimate probably about 300,000 kids every year reach adulthood with dysfunction in their lives. That is huge, because by year two, there's 600,000. Year three, there's 900,000. Year four, 1.2 million. So what is the scope of this problem? You can trace it back to accessibility to high-speed internet. And this is important because Dr. Nick Yee out of Stanford showed the three elements that make gaming incredibly addictive is that the games have immersion, achievement, and also facilitates social interactions. Now, immersion is common with books, movies, and video games. But video games are unique when compared to movies and books, is that they also provide achievement, but now with high-speed internet provides a social interaction. So when you look back in history, 2002 is when the cable modems became mainstream, as well as Xbox Live. 2005, 2006, that's when PlayStation Network came live, and also high-speed internet through like Verizon Fios, for example, which is the fiber optic network. So when you're looking at like even phone games, 4G became live a couple of years ago. Now, 4G is faster than my cable modem was in 2002. So really, we are at the kind of like the tip of the iceberg, because these kids now growing up with high-speed internet, playing games in excess, and they're now introduced to this addictive property of the games being immersive, providing achievement, and social interaction.
Now, talk about the social interaction part of it, because I would think that most gamers are playing by themselves. Is that not the case?
Not the case. So really, the thing that turned me on was the social interaction, because I played games when I was, you know, younger. I played the Atari 2600. I played, you know, the Pac-Man, the Space Invaders, and the Asteroid. Those games were made to end. You die 3 lives, you have to start over. So you can only play those games so much. The games that are highly addictive now, like Clash of the Clans or World of Warcraft or RuneScape, they are never-ending worlds. And they're never ending with peer pressure. So the medical research shows that when men with low testosterone play the game Tetris, and play any other game actually, and there's a human opponent on the other side, their testosterone levels increase. So we get excited when we play against human players. And I felt that personally. So when I went to med school and I was able to hook up my 56K modem and play Warcraft 2, the Tides of Darkness, a real-time strategy game similar to like Clash of the Clans, when I was able to beat another human being, the physiological arousal and rush with that was incredible.
And I think for those that maybe don't play, we have really no concept of what a rush this really is, right? I mean, because as you said, I mean, these games have gotten so much better, so sophisticated. The graphics and everything, the speed, it really is mind-boggling.
That's right. And so the way I describe this is that for those who don't play video games, think about chess in the park in New York. They play chess 24/7. So think about the excitement when you get to play chess with another human being versus a computer chessboard where, you know, the actual chess pieces kind of move by themselves with a computer. That's boring, right? But when you play with another human being, it's exciting. The other analogy I can provide for those who don't play video games, think about the card games you play, like bridge and let's say, you know, ochre and go fish and poker. When you play with people, it's definitely much more fun. It's a social element. What the video games do nowadays is able to take that real life experience of playing cards and board games and chess with other people face to face. They are able to now to facilitate it online through a virtual reality simulator. So now people don't have to wait till the next party, bridge night, to play, right? But how many old ladies and old gentlemen, not to say that old people play bridge, but think about the that population, how many people look forward to bridge night? But imagine if you had bridge night every single minute of your life where you can go in the closet and play bridge online with somebody who now is your friend and gives you that same kind of social gratification that you get when you get bridge night every Friday night.
And clearly, of course, if you're having your social interaction online, you're not having it with the real people, right? Your spouses and families particularly.
And that's in lies the problem, Neil, because what happens is it starts out really benign. So you start playing games and you're playing online and you meet all these people. And then pretty soon you notice that you play more and more. So 2 hours becomes four becomes six. And then all of a sudden you spend less time with real people and you spend more time with all these online friends. And now the problem is as you spend more time with online friends, your relationships in real life will wax and actually wane away. And eventually when they disappear and dissipate, then the only friends you have are online. So then what happens is the addictive behavior is transferred now to completely online where they spend online and that's where they get their social interaction and their friendship. So when you take that away from them, they're completely depressed. And that's why parents don't understand when the kids say, all my friends are online. Well, it's true because they got to the point where they don't develop any real life relationships and all their investment is on online relationships.
Before we take a break here, just to, should mention, you do have a website, right? Is it hookedongames.com?
Yeah, so I have two websites. Hookedongames.com is my book website. And then we also have Real Battle Ministries, where basically my wife and I go and speak and educate and help people understand the neuroscience and what it does to kids. And that's realbattle.org.
Realbattle.org. Check that out, and we'll have a link up on our website as well. I want to talk more with Dr. Andrew Doan in just a moment and invite you to join the conversation. Maybe this is something that has affected or impacted you and your family. We'd love to hear your story. 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or again, if it's more convenient to drop us a note, you can do that online at myfaithradio.com. And then just click on the Connecting Faith show page. And there's an email link right there, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith or 877-93-FAITH. Dr. Andrew Doan joining us today. He's authored the book called Hooked on Games. Really represents a lot of his story because he is a recognized expert in video game addiction, has a doctoral degree in neuroscience, but he also spent years addicted to video gaming, some 20,000 hours over a nine-year period or so, and it affected his family severely. We'll talk a little bit more about that and maybe some encouragement for other family members coming up here in just a moment. Invite you to join the conversation here on Connecting Faith. Two past the hour, talking today about addiction. About video game and internet addictions with Dr. Andrew Doan, who's a medical doctor, a neuroscientist, and a recovering video game addict. His profession during the daytime is ophthalmology, but at night he's a secret gamer. No, he's actually, that was the case years ago. And Dr. Doan, we've heard a little bit about your story, but and you were married at the time, had a young family when you were kind of in the midst, the height of your addiction. Is it something that started, you know, as a kid, and just you mentioned when you were at medical school, so it didn't abate, or did you just sort of put it away for a while and pick it up again?
Well, you know, the activity for me was that when I was a kid, it wasn't that it wasn't that bad because I didn't have that social interaction online with people. And so I was a three sports letterman in high school. I was very active. I had friends. I had a girlfriend. I dated, you know, somebody for actually several years. And so in a way, the gaming addiction, I couldn't really say I was an addict as a child. But what happened when I went to medical school, when I was introduced to online activity, that's when the 56K modem came available to me. And actually, you know, was a, I guess, an internet geek, although, you know, when I was younger. So I had all the different modems. I had the 300 baud, 600 baud modems, but those were way too slow to play games online. And, you know, it would take like all night long to download even 1 megabyte, for example. But when we've got the 56K modem and it facilitated the social interaction, that's when my gaming addiction manifested itself, because I didn't know how to deal with stress. And I didn't know how to deal with the need for gratification and instant gratification. And when I was introduced to online play, that's when it just got out of control. And so my family suffered. You know, my wife slapped a restraining order on me because I didn't sleep, and I was always angry, and I had hair trigger rage. And my wife would say, stop playing, and I would get mad about that and not really sure why I was so grouchy and so verbally abusive. And in part, it was because of sleep deprivation. He's only slept 2-3 hours a night. And so my kids and my relationship suffered, because my son at the time was you know, was just an infant, and my daughter was an infant too. They're now 17 and 15. But at the time, you know, I didn't spend much time with them. I just gave them their, you know, baths and get them ready for bed. But as soon as they went down around 8 p.m., I'd jump right on the computer, and I'd play until 4, 5 o'clock in the morning.
And I know you, in the book you talk about, actually, you learned how to feed your son with the bottle left-handed so you could use the mouse, right?
Oh, that was so sad. And I know a lot of dads do that, too. And at the time, you know, I was still in school and learning neuroscience, but my favorite thing to tell my wife was, come on, just leave me alone. He's only a baby. He's not going to remember. But now when I lecture around the country on this thing, the time between 0 to 12 years old is really critical, because that's when the brain of a child is most programmable, is able to learn the best, and their brains are growing rapidly within the first 2 years of life.
So what would you advise for, you know, wives like your wife, I mean, to maybe be able to, instead of getting the restraining order, is there a place to stop it before it gets to that point? I mean, you clearly were addicted and weren't going to stop, but what kind of recommendation do you give for maybe a young bride who discovered that her husband's just playing games all night?
You know, it starts with education, and to realize that video game and internet gaming disorder, which is the official term that the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Diseases has coined this disorder that needs to be more researched as internet gaming disorder, to recognize that is real. And once we know, are educated, then we can recognize it not for being something weird or just strange or it happens to other people, that there's 1 in 11 people that can be affected. And it affects women too. So it's both men and women. And so for the spouses, what I recommend is to be educated on the signs and symptoms. So the signs and symptoms of addictive play would be, over time, does a person need to play more and more to feel the same kind of high or this pleasure? Do they need to spend more time and money on gaming in order to feel good? Are they playing games to escape? Are they lying about how much they play? Are they becoming restless and irritable when asked not to play? And do they play games instead of going to work or going to school? Or have they sacrificed friends and family to play? Have they sacrificed sleep in order to play? And if their personal hygiene is degrading because they're not, you know, they're not taking care of themselves because they're playing more games. So these are the signs and symptoms similar to what you would see in an alcoholic, right? As as being problems and red flags so that a young bride or young spouse can actually get help and address the problem. Sit down with your spouse and talk about it. And then find a counselor, find a mental health provider who understands internet gaming disorder so that they can get help. And then also perhaps hook into your local church and talk to your pastor, talk to a recovery pastor at your church. These are things that need to be addressed early rather than later, because the longer the behavioral addiction goes on, the harder it is to break.
Well, in fact, you talked about, you know, sort of hygiene and health and everything. I mean, you were kind of a mess by the time you finally stopped and turned around, right?
Oh, yeah. I had health problems. I was, you know, I weigh about 170 pounds now, but at the time in my height of my gaming addiction, I was over 200 pounds. And that's a lot for a guy who's only 5'7" and a half. You know, my frame is not that big. And so 200 pounds in weight is a lot. And so I had stretch marks. I had carpal tunnel from clicking the mouse too much. I had serious health ramifications. You know, I had an arm infection, a skin infection because of my poor hygiene. And I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol. The research shows that the sympathetic tone, the sympathetic arousal is increased in gamers. So when you take somebody who's addicted or even not addicted and you let them play let's say a violent video game, their blood pressure can go to 190 over 140 within 30 minutes of gameplay. That sustained arousal is not healthy for the capillaries, the brain, the in organs, the heart. And so all that high blood pressure will lead to serious medical problems long term.
You mentioned your kids are teens now. Are there any video games in the Doan household?
Yeah, we do. We have a Wii, but, you know, we had to get rid of the PlayStation games because my son was addicted to gaming, naturally because I was an addict, you know, kind of runs in the family. You know, there's probably a genetic trait for all addictive behaviors. And so my son was addicted to gaming, and it got to the point where all he wanted to do was talk about the game. We caught him sneaking out in the middle of the night to play games. And so we actually took away his games at about the age of 13 or 14. But we kept the Wii, and we kept the Wii, and we kept the social games, kind of like the family games, Dance Dance Revolution, playing, let's say, the kind of like the board game types of games on the Wii, or the sports games. And we would play as a family. So we would say, okay, Friday night, we'd play as a family. But you know what? When the kids developed other interests in life, they no longer wanted to play on Friday night. So we had this Wii collecting dust now, and no one plays with it. Even though we don't really, you know, lock down the games in terms, you know, in our family, but we made the rule that if we're going to play games, we're going to play games together as a family, kind of like a family activity. But it's been years since we played the Wii. But we definitely don't let our kids have handheld devices. My 17-year-old son and 15-year-old daughter do not have smartphones, because we know that the kids who tend to play video games will also use pornography. So it's a portable computer that allows them to do a lot of digital activities that we don't want them to do. So they have flip phones, and we monitor their text messages and how much they text. We don't give them basically access to the computers by themselves. So we unlock the computers with a password that my wife and I only know. And then we also monitor the computers with programs to make sure they're not surfing and doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And why do we do this? Because their brains aren't fully developed until they're age 25. And that's what the research shows. So their frontal lobes, the areas that can determine right and wrong and decision making or higher executive functions, don't fully develop until they're 25. And the LA school districts actually proved this in an experiment where they purchased $1 billion worth of iPads. The iPads were also locked down so that they couldn't play video games or surf porn sites. But within 2 weeks, the high school students jailbroke the iPads so that they can play video games and look at porn. So the school had to recall $1 billion of their iPads as a failed experiment.
Which I guess we shouldn't be surprised at. Probably there is a fair amount of creativity among those that are looking for for something more than the standard way. Are there some games that you mentioned, you know, like the Wii, some of those sort of kind of family sport type things? Are there some games that would be, you know, okay to play for a teen or as a family?
Absolutely. I recommend people go to Common Sense Media. Their website is amazing. They rate the games and they talk about the family values of the games. I think that the other way to start is looking at the game ratings. You know, the game companies have already rated, you know, for example, T for teen, M for mature, 17 plus, you know, PG games, G games. So follow the game ratings. Where I find people are at fault, though, is that what they do is they tend not to want to buy games for the kids. So the dad would buy a mature-only game. However, they would let the child play the mature game, too.
Lead by example. I want to get to Rob's call here. He's listening in Minneapolis on line one, and Rob has been down that road. Rob, you're on with Andrew Doan. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say this really hits home for me because all the symptoms that you talked about, Doctor, I went through. And in fact, I played a Call of Duty. Hadn't really been a gamer at all, but once I was introduced to the online format, it became pretty addictive pretty quick, and I had fits of rage after sleeplessness, and it actually led to drug use to stay up even later or to stay awake and keep my mind focused. And right around that same time, I also was introduced to Christ and gave my life to Christ, and had the hunger for the word actually outweighed the hunger for the game, and I ended up having to just break the game in half and sell the console. And it's been about 4 or 5 years now, and I haven't played since. But I just want to weigh in and say thanks for covering this topic because I think it's very relevant.
Yeah, Rob, thanks for your story, and glad to hear that you are walking the right path today. Appreciate your call. Dr. Doan, if you want to just react to that, I mean, that you probably hear stories similar to that.
Rob, praise Jesus for your courage and for, you know, you diving into the word and following Christ. I mean, that I think is amazing testimony. And yes, you the more we talk about this openly, the more people will feel like, hey, you know, I'm not alone. And it's not a strange thing because 1 in 11 are affected. So that's 3 million kids, 8 to 18. So when you take the next generation out or in the next decade out, there's about 3 million young men, just like me and Rob, who experience the same thing. And this is not uncommon. And so in addition to my ophthalmology work, I'm actually doing research now looking at the addiction rates in young men and also looking at the violence and also the bits of rage and also the sleep deprivation to really tease out what are the characteristics of all these, the addictive behaviors associated with excessive gaming looks like.
I want to talk maybe when we come back after a short break, talk a little bit about the, not only violence maybe in behavior, but it's certainly in the games and some of the connections that there might be with the games and the behavior. And we'll get more from a recovering video game addict, Dr. Andrew Doan, medical doctor, neuroscientist, and has written a book called Hooked on Games. And he and his wife have a ministry called Real Battle Ministry. You can find out at realbattle.org. We are welcoming your call. Love to hear your story as well. You can relate to what Rob had to share or Dr. Doan, or maybe you have some concerns about a family member. Love to be able to answer your questions. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We'll continue Dr. Andrew Doan in just a moment. There's only one name that really has ultimate value and worth and where we want to be focusing our attention on. But in the meantime, we can get derailed with things like video games and internet addictions. And Dr. Andrew Doan has been there for about 9 years, was invested over 20,000 hours playing games, and had to break in addiction, and it nearly broke his family. He tells the story in the book Hooked on Games, and you can find out more about their ministry at realbattle.org. Dr. Andrew Doan is a medical doctor and a neuroscientist, does ophthalmology by daytime, eye surgery and the like, and is focusing a lot on research now and neuroscience in terms of brain development. And I did want to ask you, We talked a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you do in your family because the brain's not fully developed till 25. So does gaming actually affect brain development in any way? Do we have any research on that? Well,
yes, absolutely. You know, the brain development in a child is really critical between the age of 0 and 12. And so the brain scans have shown from the National Institutes of Mental Health, they have this 10-year-long brain study that show that brains actually prune and also become almost set in stone by the time a child is in the late teens. And then by the time they're 25, it still can change, but it's still most of the programming has already been done. And so we know that from analogies of, for example, sensory organs like the eyes. If the eyes are not aligned properly and connected to the brain by the age of 12 or 13, there's something called lazy eye or amblyopia, where the visual cortex actually atrophy and turn off the eye that's connected to it. So therefore, if a child is using a game too much because of the pleasure, the physiological arousal, the mental arousal, and they prefer that to over other activities in their life. And let's say they're playing, like the Kaiser Foundation says, 7 hours, 38 minutes a day, there are going to be brain areas that are going to be affected. So imagine if your brain has areas for self-control, reflective thought, sitting still, creativity, language development, interpersonal relationships. Those brain areas will atrophy because they're not being used. And so the question I ask is that, when I see a child with diagnosis of autism or Asperger's or other developmental disorders, the first thing I ask is how much screen time that child has had. Not to play down those diagnoses, because they are real. But now we have to tease out what are the real genetic, you know, Asperger's and autisms versus those induced by too much digital media.
You know, we're concerned about gaming, and of course, I mean, online is just sort of seems to be a haven for pornography and the like. But so violence and pornography influence in games, obviously, that seems like that's going to play out in the behavior at some point.
Correct, absolutely. And so, you want me to address the violent content?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay, yeah. So. The violent content does matter, because a child, remember how I said the brain does not fully develop until they're like 25 years old? So the frontal lobe, the executive functions of the brain are not fully developed. And so basically when you introduce a six-year-old to violent media, and that's why there's rated R movies, right? So if you introduce a child to rated R movie at the age of six, it's going to change and rewire their programming of what right is right and wrong. But in an adult, it's going to affect them much more differently. So we got to be very careful the content that we feed our children. And that's why we don't send children to rated R movies. So likewise, if a game is mature-only game, we got to be careful how we introduce those type of games to young children as well. So to me, the research is very clear. Bushman out of Ohio State, Gentile out of Iowa State, they have shown that violent video games tend to cause violent tendencies and also antisocial behaviors in children. So what's interesting to me, also is that I don't try to concentrate too much on the content, because I believe that the violent behaviors and the hair trigger rage comes out of sleep deprivation and also the addiction itself. Mm. And that's something we're not looking at. So perhaps it's less the content, but more of the addiction. So when we have 1 in 11 kids who are addicted, and they're addicted to violent media, that's a serious problem, because now we have 3 million kids running around 8 to 18 around our country who could have that hair trigger rage, have that hair trigger impulse problem, and then they also are filled with violent thoughts. They can be very dangerous. And you see that in the news all the time about children who, when their mothers take away their games, there's an Iowa case where the child shot the mom 24 times, you know, after taking the game away from the child who clearly was addicted because his grades were dropping and all he wanted to do was play, so the mom took it away. There are countless stories of these types of violent acts. There's a mom in Florida, I believe, who's now serving time in prison because she shook her baby to death for interrupting the game Farmville. There's, you know, there's cases of child abuse and cases of spousal abuse because of, you know, taking the game away from the addict.
Dr. Doan, let me ask you, this is a note that came in online at myfaithradio.com from Gretchen, who says, my nephew is 11 years old and is playing video games and online most of the time when he visits my grandparents at the cabin. I see that he's irritable if asked to do other things. He prefers to be at the computer while eating, too. He's not playing against others online, just his own games, but he seems addicted. Is there anything I can suggest as the aunt? I don't want to be critical, but, you know, she's concerned about her 11-year-old nephew.
That's a great question. So I believe that there's a genetic tendencies to all addictive behaviors, but it's not a bad thing because these are so I'm going to give you a word of hope first. I believe that the addicts are similar to me. They have the genetic trait of being a go-getter. They somehow their adrenaline is revved up easier. They have abilities to basically, you know, they're adrenaline junkies basically. And so things that can turn them on, like such as video games or things like, you know, drugs and alcohol can also rev up that system easy. They can be easily abused. So when you recognize that a child could be that 1 in 11 who could be addicted to gaming, even though they're not playing online, the best recommendation is to take that game away completely from the child. Because what we're doing is we're basically trying to moderate it and feed that addictive behaviors. What I've seen from my experience is that those type of children that already manifest problems, irritability, lack of being able to control the gaming, when they're giving limited gaming, what happens is when they go off to college, they are a mess. Those are the kids that fail out of college and fail out of life. So the best thing to do is probably educate the grandparents, educate the family, educate the child, and explain to the child why this game is being removed completely from their life.
Well, speaking of education, talk a little bit about the resources available. Your book, Hooked on Games, but also your ministry, Real Battle, at realbattle.org. What kinds of help can people find there?
They can find the addiction survey questions. So there's the 11 question survey that you can use. There's also blogs, articles, and then also there's a link to our YouTube channel. So whenever we give talks, we put all our videos online so you can actually take a look at it. So it saves me time, so I don't have to travel all over the country to talk and say the same thing over and over. So I would say, you know, go online to that realbattle.org and check it out and follow us on YouTube as well as on Facebook.
You know, I know your story is one of faith, and it came through kind of crisis point, but there is some hope for those who maybe are trying to break this addiction or they have family members that are concerned. Maybe just let's close with a word of hope.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of hope. And so there's always hope in Jesus Christ. There's always hope in having a renewal of the mind through the Holy Spirit. And so for me, I have experienced that firsthand, and that's why I'm such a devout Christian, and I just love God so much because he's given me new life, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now is to help others to understand this. And there's no condemnation in Christ Jesus, okay? So no matter how far you've gone down this road of addiction, there's always redemption. God will always take this back and fix it for good. And there's also hope in the fact that we also know and more educated about this addictive behavior. So if we recognize it early enough, there are organizations, there's like Online Gamers Anonymous, there's also resources out there that can help you get back into a life of moderation and also functionality. So there's definitely hope, and there's people out there who care about you. So if you're in trouble on this and you're a college student, you're listening and you realize that failing all your classes because of gaming addiction, therefore, you know, keep in mind that you're not alone and that there is hope and that you can actually have a life and that you're not weird and that you're not strange and that you're not somebody who has a unique problem, because there's tons of people out there, and there's strength in actually, you know, admitting that you have a problem, and there's also strength in trying to find help and seek that help.
Getting some hope and help today from Dr. Andrew Doan, who's a recovering video game addict. recognized expert in technology and video game addiction. He has a doctoral degree in neuroscience and does a great deal of study in this area of brain development. He's also practices comprehensive ophthalmology. Has written a book called Hooked on Games, and he and his wife, Julie, have a great ministry called Real Battle Ministries. Find out more at realbattle.org, realbattle.org. And if you want to catch part of this or listen to it again or pass it on to a friend, you can always find the podcast after the show. We post them online at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. And thanks for listening to the show.